The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day 2 of this 7-day sesshin here at Mountain Gate in October 2014. And I'd like to continue sharing Hakuin's teachings as compiled in his book Poison Blossoms from a Thicket of Thorn, translated by Norman Waddell. Hakuin was a rather unusual guy, and traditionally in China and in Japan, the teachings of a master were gathered together by their students, particularly a senior student often, and published after their death. And they were normally titled The Sayings and Doings of Master So-and-so. But Hakuin himself pushed the publication of this collection of his stuff. He had one of his senior students working on it, but it sounds like he was the driving force behind the whole thing. And in fact, there's a foreword that supposedly was written by someone else, but it is so much in the language of Hakuin, and then there are also letters of his to that particular man who was the supposed author of that foreword, indicating that Hakuin was pushing him to provide the funds for the publication of this vast treasury of teachings of Hakuin. And indeed, rather than it being published after he died, it was published by him before he died, and it didn't come about with the title Sayings and Doings of Master Hakuin. It came about with his choice of title, which was Poison Blossoms from a Thicket of Thorn, indicating that they were deep and challenging teachings, not easily understood unless you were doing deep zazen for quite a while. Hakuin, as you recall, was credited with single-handedly bringing the Rinzai sect back to life. It had fallen into disregard and disrepair during his, probably previous to his lifetime, and through his own efforts, he brought back the intensity and the depth of training. I'd like to share that little piece because it gives you a bit of his personality. The layman who was originally going to provide the funds for publishing this, for whatever reason, backed out. Whether he didn't have the funds after all or what, it's not clear. But this attachment to the printed edition of Poison Blossoms, supposedly written by Layman Kida, but it really speaks volumes of the personality of Hakuin, and he probably did write it himself. It reads, "On my way through Suruga to the northeastern provinces in the winter of the 6th year of the Horeki era, 1756, I stopped at Shoinji to have an audience with Zen Master Hakuin. He was suffering from illness at the time, so I waited until his condition improved to receive his teaching. This gave me an opportunity to read a manuscript of his Zen records, compiled in 9 fascicles by his student Dai Shu from Hoki province, which was kept in the attendants' quarters. In the work, Master Hakuin vigorously attacks the sham Zen teachings that have appeared around the country with words and phrases of great power and penetrating insight. It was like hearing the howls of the Lion King, or deep, ground-shaking thunder. At times, the master points out errors in the Blue Cliff record. At times, he clarifies the meaning of Tung Shan's 5 ranks, which is a complex barrier koan. Anyone who reads it is certain to cast false teachings aside and turn to the authentic path of Zen. In these pages, the guidance Hakuin gives to students negotiating the secret depths emerges with great strength and vigor. It is totally beyond ordinary, unenlightened understanding. If a work such as this did not exist, how could students become aware of the genuine path of Zen practice? I thought that publishing the manuscript would help students to more readily penetrate the Zen source. When I mentioned this to Hakuin Roshi, he replied, "No, don't do that. If the notions my mouth happens to mumble off when I'm asleep are published, it will only steer future generations off course. Take the manuscript and burn it. I don't see any need to make a special effort to humiliate myself." Despite my most earnest attempts to make him change his mind, he remained adamantly opposed to the idea. So when it came time for me to leave Shōinji, I bundled the manuscript secretly and with my belongings and took it back to Osaka with me. I began making arrangements for it to be published as quickly as possible. There was no time for the text to undergo proper editing, so it is possible that some of the Chinese characters in the text may be mistaken. For that, I must beg the reader's indulgence. It is nonetheless my hope and prayer that once these records are published, they will become a standard against which future generations of Zen students will measure themselves. So, that is Hakuin's own personality speaking loud and clear there. We have the translations of letters to that layman, also by Norman Waddell, that indicate a very different story from what is printed in the book. But that's the official tale. And now I'd like to share with you one of the entries in the book. It's full of all kinds of stuff. It's practically everything that Hakuin said. Lighting incense at funerals, at evening teas, and all manner of occasions. Somehow they were all recorded, most likely by Hakuin, but not necessarily. It could have been put to paper by his students. The interesting thing about this text, this collection, is that Hakuin actually used it to lecture, to comment on his own words, well before he died, and apparently was quite well received and quite widely received, and quite common that the editions that were published would be kept by senior monks. And when they went to these lectures of Hakuin's, they would actually make annotations in the books. And so whatever text Norman Waddell translated from actually had some annotations that can help explain some of the terms and some of the sentences that Hakuin uses in these. So this particular one is called The General Discourse Given During Zen Lectures on the Records of National Master Ryu Ho. It is possible, Ryu Ho, without knowing the characters that make the name, it is possible that this name means Dragon Dharma. But who knows, because we don't have the characters, the Chinese characters. And there's a little bit of an introduction to it. It says, the lectures Hakuin refers to here were given at the age of 72 in the seventh year of Horeki, 1757, at a practice meeting held at Nanshōin in Minobu, Kai Province. National Master Ryu Ho is properly Daito Kokushi, who is hugely famous in Japan. National Master Daito, the honorific title of Shuho Myocho, founder of the Daitokuji in Kyoto, and the Japanese Zen priest Hakuin revered above all others. We know from an annotation that Hakuin was lecturing not on Daito's records themselves, but on dream words from a land of dreams, his Zen commentary on Daito's Zen records, which had been published 7 years earlier. So, Worthy of note is Hakuin's mention of his famous Sound of One Hand koan, which the priest of Nanshoin, Hakuin's longtime friend Sen Yu Chie, had at the age of 68 recently passed. In the verse couplet attached at the end of the talk, Hakuin alludes to Nanshoin's location overlooking the swiftly flowing Fuji River as it rushes down from the Mount Fuji highlands to empty into Suruga Bay. The classic koan in Rinzai Zen is the Mu Koan. A monk asks Joshu, "Does even the dog have the Buddha nature?" And Joshu answered Mu, which means no, or negative. But Hakuin felt that asking the sound of one hand was a more effective koan, and it's a two-stage koan. What is the sound of one hand? One works on until one has pierced through it. And then one works on the second half, which is stopping the sounds. How do you stop the sounds? At any rate, here is the lecture. Anyone who wants to understand the records of National Master Daito, first of all, must penetrate the koan, Su Shan's Memorial Tower. Su Shan's Memorial Tower. That is one of the Nanto koans, I believe. Difficult to solve koans, especially difficult to solve koans. And in it, a monk goes to the master and says the construction of the master's memorial tower has been completed. And the master asks the monk, "How much will you pay the mason?" And the head monk, who's the one that came, says, "I leave that entirely up to you." And so then the master says, "Is it best to give the mason 3 cash, or is it best to give him 2 cash, or is it best to give him 1 cash? In ancient China, money or cash, coins, were carried around on a string because they all had holes in them. And actually, Chinese money today still has holes in it, but it's not carried around on a string anymore. And the monk was dumbfounded. What was this master really wanting from the monk? It's pretty typical in ancient China for the students of a master to build a memorial tower. It's not normally done before they die, however. What's Su Shan asking for? Not that brick and mortar memorial tower. What's he say? What's he asking this monk? So that was apparently a koan that Hakuin felt was very important to pass through. It's one of the advanced koans. And then he continues, "There are greater and lesser dharmas. There's genuine and false fortune. Even if someone rises to the heights of worldly success and is blessed with carriages or a crown and more wealth than Shi Kun, if within he has no links to Prajna wisdom, if he lacks the guidance of a good friend and teacher and merely abandons himself with prideful self-indulgence to his passions and desires, after he dies, he's destined to descend into the endless suffering of one of the 3 evil destinations. It is for this reason that worldly fortune is said to be a curse in the 3 worlds." This Shi Cheng that is mentioned apparently was famous as the wealthiest man in China, and apparently he was quite flamboyant with his wealth, perhaps something like a Donald Trump of ancient China, but I gather he was quite a bit more wealthy. When we chase after wealth, fame, and fortune, we don't usually have to wait until we die before we begin to suffer. people who are vastly wealthy seem to be peddling fast to stay ahead of the Grim Reaper, to stay ahead of hanging on to their wealth. And when we die, what's going to really matter then? Is it going to matter how much money we have, how many possessions we have? Or is something else suddenly going to become more important? As in this little weekend sesshin that we did in Peñasco over this past weekend. And in Sanzen, question asked, what is bringing you to practice? And there's an 80-year-old woman in the session, and she said, death. I'll be 80 in a few days, and I can't hide from it anymore. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I can't believe it's going to be many, 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 many years from now. I think I'd better get to know something about it, at least become free of being fearful of it, before it happens. And there was another woman, not yet 50, who said her entire life she'd been struggling with the question of death, even as a child. And I think about my grandson. I was babysitting him when he was 3 years old, and we would go into the library at the Rochester Zen Center, and the only children's books, of course, they had, it was stories of the Buddha's life. And we never got past the beginning, more or less, because we got to what are known as the four sights, the old person, the sick person, the corpse, and the sage. We never got past the corpse, actually, even to the sage. He just kept saying, what's sick? What's dead? What's dead? What's dead? What indeed is dead? If we are sitting here on the cushion, fortunately, the very best thing we can do is dive deep into our depths of our mind in search of the answer to that question. And not just that question, but who am I really? Where did I come from? What will happen to me when I die? Where will I go? Or will I go somewhere? Or is it just the end? Finish. Nothing more. And there is the verse to the koan. How will it be for you when the light of your eyes is falling? Will you be like the crab with its 7 arms and 8 legs struggling to get out of the boiling water? If, however, a person is possessed of true mettle and pursues their training diligently, heedless of their own well-being, they will one morning kick over the rolling karmic seas of birth and death and achieve a kensho as clear and unmistakable as if seen in the palm of his hand. The penetration will extend from the highest heavens all the way to the yellow springs, and they will experience a tremendous joy and a perfect, untrammeled freedom. Here we're talking about a very deep kensho experience. In all the human world and deva realms, there's nothing to compare with it. They will not rest satisfied with this, however, but will continue to push forward, never retreating, chewing to pieces and swallowing down all the claws and fangs of the Dharma cave, ripping to shreds the divine life-destroying talismans, constantly carrying out the great practice of the bodhisattvas, assembling great Dharma assets and attending the great Dharma giving that brings immeasurable benefit to men and devas. This will be a person of truly inestimable worth, a person of genuine good fortune and virtue. The priest of Shofuku-zan, Nanshoin, is one who has attained this good fortune by engaging in secret practice and hidden activity unbeknownst to others. Recently, he suddenly stomped the birthless sound of my one-hand koan into the ground. Then he totally silenced the ocean of words and phrases. That's the second part of that koan. And he didn't stop there either. He came and asked me to hold a lecture meeting that would elevate the path of Zen and promote its regimen for liberation. One of the ancients said that when a false person preaches the true Dharma becomes a false Dharma. When a true person preaches a false Dharma, the false Dharma becomes a true Dharma. Tell me, are these lectures a true Dharma or a false one? And then Hakuin gives a poem. This is regarding the enlightenment of his good friend and student that was referred to earlier. After the morning meal, I walk slowly down the temple corridor. Below, endless small boats move swiftly down the Fuji River. And there's an annotation. Somebody listening to his lecture wrote in their copy of the book, When you can wring these lines by the neck, you will know if Hakuin's Zen lectures are true or false. And today we have Nichiren Zen Dharma Teisho. This rain, this life-giving rain. How can we give life to our practice? How can we take it truly deep? How can we make sure that when we die, there will be no problem? There was recently a post on Facebook by Hozan Allen Sanalki, who is actually assistant abbot, I think, at Berkeley Zen Center, and a Zen monk, a good friend. And it seems that a very senior Zen student was stabbed in a carjacking attempt in Berkeley, and she has just died. But apparently she died quite peacefully. I'm sure that Flora Courtois died quite peacefully as well. And there's Yayako Iwasaki, the young girl whose father started doing Zazen because of a fear of death when he hit his 60th birthday. And in a year he had a Kensho experience. And she herself was dying of TB, which was rampant in Japan in the 1900s. And she decided to start doing Zazen herself, having seen the effect of the father doing Zazen. And for her, with death right at the door, she must have gone quite deeply into the practice, even though she was seriously ill and died not long afterwards. And for 3 weeks, every day in a row, she had an increasingly deep Kensho experience. This is testified to by Yastani Roshi, who apparently was at her death, which he wrote was more peaceful than anyone he had ever witnessed dying. And then there are the elderly ladies that my former daughter-in-law used to take care of in the hospital in Rochester, New York, in what was essentially a nursing home. It was a geriatric wing of the hospital, but it really was a nursing home. She said the bodies would writhe for hours after the person was declared dead. It's as if they were continuing to fight desperately for life. How will it be when the light of your eyes is falling? Will you be like the crab with its 7 arms and 8 legs struggling to get out of the boiling water? Or will you easily go, letting go of that last breath, not struggling to breathe in again? And what do you know that will make a difference? I think that's enough for today. It's wonderful to sit with the sound of the rain. It can take a person very deep. Thank you for listening. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.